Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program, via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, January 20, 2021. Some South Sudanese Americans say they expect the new administration in Washington to put more pressure on South Sudanese leaders to implement the 2018 peace agreement.
We need more transformation in the country. The core values that we've been fighting for, Joe Biden administration will be helping people of South Sudan. I know they do care.
And owners of gyms and fitness centers in Juba are hit hard by COVID-19 related lockdowns.
The slowdown between December and January. The people are usually in a holiday mood. They're not exercising. A lot of them travel to the other families.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Democrat Joe Biden is set to be sworn in as the 46th President of the United States. The inauguration is designated a national security event following a deadly assault on the U.S. Capitol by supporters of outgoing President Donald Trump. Thousands of National Guard troops and security personnel drawn from dozens of other federal agencies are keeping vigil on the streets of Washington after one of the nation's most contentious elections. Mike Sullivan reports on the mood of the nation as the United States transitions into its next political phase.
After an unprecedented break-in of the U.S. Capitol by Trump supporters and funeral of a Capitol police officer, one of five people who died in the riot. Now, unprecedented security for the Biden inauguration January 20th, and a second congressional effort to impeach the outgoing president, Donald Trump. Amid ongoing threats of violence, one Seattle man is worried.
There are a lot of people that are Donald Trump supporters that are madder than a nest of hornets. You know, they're dangerous. I don't think they're going away.
He says they're undermining President-elect Joe Biden's efforts to tackle the nation's problems.
Constantly trying to say he's an illegitimate president. And I mean, that's just the start of his term.
A Cuban immigrant in Miami is worried about Biden's progressive politics.
I expect economic, political, and social disasters for a simple reason. He is a socialist.
But another Miami resident says whoever is president deserves to be respected. He hopes Biden is successful.
I hope he does great. He's our president now. So, you know, just as I respect the President Trump, I hope Joe Biden does the best for America. We got to win.
This woman is also hopeful.
I am very happy because I think there are going to be big changes.
In Santa Monica, California, one man called on Biden to address the nation's pressing problems.
Number one is the virus. You know, we have to do a much better job. You know, we can't keep talking about it. We have to do something about it. They'll do something about it.
And Biden needs to overcome political divisions, say two other men.
I'm hoping that Biden could bring the nation back together. Hoping that he could. There's so much, I guess you could call it political segregation.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
That's actually
it's very intense.
Amid ongoing threats of violence in Washington, D.C. and around the country, the national mood is somber.
It's a mess. I don't know how they're going to fix it. I hope they can.
Nerves on edge ahead of what is usually a jubilant celebration. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News.
Still on the inauguration, some South Sudanese Americans have traveled to Washington, D.C. to witness the inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden. Jonkur Kwat Mayol is a member of the Democratic Party in the state of Washington, Seattle. He says he expects Biden to put more pressure on South Sudan's transitional government to implement the revitalized peace agreement. Mayol says without any pressure from the new U.S. administration, South Sudanese leaders will continue to delay the implementation of the country's 2018 peace agreement.
We have several people from various states. I have some 3 people from New York and other 4 from Maine, and also from all the way Ohio. So we have quite a good number of South Sudanese will be attending this inauguration today.
You say this inauguration is historic. If you are given an opportunity to speak to the new administration, what would be your ask?
Well, you know, John, America has been leading. The United States of America is the only country that can keep the balance, you know, when it comes to in terms of human rights, in terms of stability in the world, as well as a South Sudanese American. The United States have helped people of South Sudan for a very long time. And that relationship, since President Donald Trump took over, the relationship has faded away. We have not seen any, you know, connection between Trump administration with the people of South Sudan. And that's something that we hope President Joe Biden is going to work on that.
Tell us more about how you made your way all the way from Washington, Seattle to Washington, D.C. to attend this inauguration.
Yes, I am a spokesperson of United Citizens for Change, which is a political movement, South Sudanese political movement, that leading change in South Sudan, because we want to see a transformation in our country, a reform in South Sudan, to have a democratic elected government.
But are you here in Washington representing the concerned citizens of South Sudan, or are you representing your state of Washington, Seattle?
I am from the state of Washington, based in Seattle. And actually, I'm a member of the Democratic Party in Washington as well. But overall here, I'm focusing more with the South Sudanese American today in this inaugural, you know, occasion.
The relationship between South Sudan and the Trump administration has not been that good. And I remember South Sudan has been complaining that Washington has turned its back on them. With the new administration in Washington, what would you like the new administration to do for the people of South Sudan?
Yes, like I said, you know, a little earlier, people of South Sudan have been oppressed by the regime for a very long time. Since he took office, we have not seen any changes when it comes to term of, you know, the core values that we have been fighting for, to have a justice and liberty and prosperity in the country. We need more transformation in the country, the core values that we have been fighting for. Joe Biden administration will be helping people of South Sudan. I know they do care. And I know they have to help with the issue of transformation. And then we can have a real reform in South Sudan, because this is not South Sudan that we fought for. The South Sudan that the United States of America have helped and spent nearly $12 billion. This is not what it is. As I said, they took a different route. President Kiir has taken a different route and left people of South Sudan with nothing. So we are hopeful, hoping that Joe Biden administration will help people of South Sudan and to achieve their goals and go back to a right track, which is to have with democracy and transformation of system governing in South Sudan.
John Kur, people listening to me and you in Juba and other parts of the country obviously have no opportunity to ask you, but let me ask you on their behalf. Why is it that most of the time, most of you who are in the diaspora are asking for outsiders to solve your own problems?
Listen, without the United States, we wouldn't even achieve the independence in South Sudan. That's the fact. We cannot, you know, deny that. And by saying that we need help, it's not because we want them to solve our problem, you know. As I said, United States government, they've been there for the balance. They've been supportive to people of South Sudan. So asking to extend their hand for help is not for them to solve our problem. They've been there. They pressured the government of Khartoum, you know, in 2005 until we were able to reach a comprehensive peace agreement. So why not still asking them, you know, to help, you know, to bring, you know, us together so we can overcome the challenges that we are facing right now.
And what are you South Sudanese doing to solve your own problems and overcome what you're calling challenges?
Well, South Sudanese have been calling for a democratic country. They've been calling for reform in the country. But the problem, we have a president that does not listen to people. We have someone that has taken a different route, which is it become more authoritarian in the country. And everyone who is, you know, calling for a reform or a good governing in the country, they are a target of that regime. The South Sudanese, actually, they have done their part, and they have been, and we have continuing to do this.
You have been vocal on Facebook and other platforms talking about the issues of South Sudan. And at the same time, the government in Juba has been blaming people in diaspora, people like you. And the government is saying you are adding fuel to the fire by inciting people. How do you react to that?
Actually, that's not true. The individuals within the government of Kiir are the ones that are actually challenging the image of the country. We are asking, we are keep advocating that actually this is not the value of people of South Sudan. People of South Sudan, they fought that they can have a justice, they can have a free election, we can have infrastructure, we can have, you know, health facility in the country. Now, if you go to street in Juba or in Manakala or in Awil, you will see the children of orphan, the children of martyrs are begging. The widow are begging. This is not South Sudan that we fought for. So by, you know, pointing this wrong thing out, it doesn't mean that we are the one that actually, you know, challenging the image of the country. I don't know what they are talking about here, what they say that, you know, we are the one that challenging the image of the country. We are pointing the fact out, and that's how it's supposed to be.
I did not say they say you are tarnishing the image of the country, but what the government is saying is that you are adding petrol to a house that is already on fire. And if I may ask you, why are you not in Juba advocating for these changes, just like other young African leaders across the continent who are in their capitals speaking about the issues happening there? A classic example is Bobby Wine has been on the streets of Kampala. He's not backing from Washington, D.C.
That's a good question, John. How many South Sudanese actually have been talking in the ground and they have been killed? I'm not afraid of death. I would be in the country. But just to give you, you know, a point here, people of South Sudan, they have been doing this. The raw example was Isaiah Abram when he was writing articles that this is not the movement that we have been fighting for. He was killed, you know, Bol Deng and Samuel Dong. And how many South Sudanese actually they have been advocating, they have been targeted? This regime actually does not accept the truth, you know. So what we are doing here, we are not fueling. We are educating. We are telling our people, you know, what is their right exactly. But the regime doesn't want people of South Sudan to know what are their rights and what need to be done. As long as they are okay and their children are okay, that's what they want. But it shouldn't be that way, John. And that's why we must continue doing this.
That's Mayol Jonkur, a member of the Democratic Party in the state of Washington, Seattle. Mayol is also a leader of a group calling itself the Concerned Citizens of South Sudan. He spoke with me from Virginia outside Washington earlier today. Owners of gyms and fitness centers in Juba say business is down as compared to the times before the outbreak of COVID-19. Owners of health gyms and fitness centers say business has slowed down in the past 1 month after many of their clients travel out of Juba to be with their families during Christmas and the New Year celebrations. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
Ding Bier Deng, managing director of the Juba-based Dr. Bear Sports Complex, says the fitness business is no longer booming like it was before the COVID-19 lockdown, when gyms and fitness centers were shut down for nearly 6 months.
The slowdown between December and January. The people are usually in a holiday mood. They're not exercising. A lot of them travel with other families, the village sometimes, Nairobi, Khartoum, you know, South Sudan, we have big families and they all split up.
Despite those challenges, the Dr. Bear's Purse Complex has retained about 400 members with monthly subscriptions in different sports categories. Deng says before the coronavirus hit, the company had to introduce morning sessions to reduce overcrowding during the evening hours, offering reduced prices for morning sessions to attract customers.
We have two memberships. There's £23,000 a month. You can pay and you have access anytime you want. And then we have another membership that you can pay $18,000 that you are allowed to come all in morning hours, because evening hours is very crowded.
Deng says he is surprised at how much South Sudanese love exercising and sports in general. He says their enthusiasm has inspired him to consider offering more services to clients. Another successful fitness center in Juba is the Tharawa Breeze Gym and Spa in the High Tharawa residential area. Its managing director, Francis Aiga Okayo, says the outbreak of coronavirus in South Sudan was a setback to the business because even after the lockdown was lifted, he had to work remotely from Uganda since the government there had not yet reopened its borders.
Even my trainer, I cannot send him back to Kenya, so he had to hang around. But because he was with me from 2011, so we are more or less like family members. Even the clients who know him were able to come and support him, even bring him food and all those kind of things.
The Tharawa Breeze Gym offers a range of services including weightlifting, general workout equipment, aerobics, and saunas and steam baths. Okayo says when the government lifted the COVID-19 lockdown and gyms reopened in July last year, more than 200 former clients began streaming back into the gym for workouts, prompting him to offer morning and evening sessions to reduce overcrowding in the evening hours. Tharawa Breeze Gym is charging an attraction fee of 18,000 South Sudanese pounds per month as the gym picks up business following the COVID-19 lockdown. Later this year, Okayo says he will increase prices when new services are introduced, such as massages, physiotherapy, a beauty parlor, and an organic restaurant.
Our main focus is the middle class, because they don't do exercise. They are prone to getting sicknesses like diabetes, like pressure. So as much as we do, we promote exercise, it's also good to blend it with the kind of food you eat to ensure we live longer.
Okayo says people should eat right and take exercise seriously, which he says does not have to be working out at a gym, but can mean jogging or doing push-ups at home to stay healthy. Health and fitness experts say exercise helps prevent excessive weight gain, improves moods, boosts energy, promotes better sleep, and can prevent or manage many health problems like high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and depression. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your definition of the life well lived?
When you accomplish your set goals. Like, for example, when you say, I must finish university, even if you don't work, as long as you're finished, there is no problem. Even if I die today after finish.
When someone is living a godly way, focused on achieving his or her own goals, and trying to be morally upright.
Though it's not everybody that actually have a dream, but there are some, this set of people that have a dream and then working towards to achieve that dream.
A life well lived is one where one is able to fulfill his dreams, his aspirations, his goals, all that he wants before he dies.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. The International Rescue Committee says it is ramping up emergency response to protect women and children who fled the conflict in the Ethiopia's Tigray region and crossed the border into Sudan. The international organization is working on recruiting social workers, setting up safe places to provide psychosocial support for women and children, reuniting unaccompanied children with their families and providing cash assistance to help women and children against further abuses at the camp. As Nabil Biagio reports from Washington, ICR officials in Sudan say the organization needs more financial support to protect women and children.
The International Rescue Committee says it is working on recruiting social workers, setting up safe spaces to provide psychosocial support for women and children, reunifying unaccompanied children with their families, and providing cash assistance to shield women and children against gender-based abuse and other types of abuse. The IRC estimates that there are about 600 unaccompanied children who were separated from their parents when they fled the Tigray region and arrived in Sudan as refugees. Caroline Kaneza, International Rescue Committee's Interim Country Director for Sudan, says, when children are separated from their families, it means the support structure is not there.
That's why, as an organization, we have to move fast and make sure that there is a support system for that. Either we trace back their families or put them in a formulated foster homes, so that they don't get further exposure to risks like exploitation and other things. It's making sure that whatever has happened there is addressed, but at the same time, completely reducing the risk as they get into the camps.
Vanessa Kauf is a child protection specialist with IRC in Sudan's Gadarif state. She says the overwhelming majority of the nearly 60,000 Ethiopian refugees who arrived in Sudan are women and children, people who need protection.
In refugee camp settlements, children and women are very vulnerable and might be exposed to further violence, including GBV, sexual violence, but also physical violence against children, for example. So that's why we are trying to put in place mechanisms to protect and prevent this violence to happen. So both for children and women.
Kauf says the IRC is working with women and children who might be traumatized from violence they experience or witness in Ethiopia, as well as making sure that women and children are not exposed to further abuse in the camps.
We will also provide psychosocial support to women and children, so of course separately. And we also provide some cash or in-kind assistance to women and to children and their family to reduce the risk of negative coping mechanism, to avoid a try to be working or to be exposed to exploitation, including sexual exploitation.
Kauf says the IRC is also working on reunifying children who made their way to Sudan without their parents during their flight from Ethiopia.
A lot of children have been scattered, separated from their family across the different transit center and camp. So now the challenge is to, of course, trace their family and reunify them. So IRC will be working in close coordination with the social services of South of Sudan, so the State Council for Child Welfare. And we will work together with the CCW on building the capacity and providing case management services to unaccompanied and separated children.
Kauf says the IRC needs more financial support from donors to hire social workers and provide Ethiopian women and children with a number of protection services. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Still on refugee affairs, the UN Refugee Agency reports thousands of Eritrean refugees trapped by fighting in Ethiopia's northern Tigray province are in desperate need of food and other essential supplies and services. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The Ethiopian government has denied humanitarian agencies access to Eritrean refugee camps since it began its military offensive in early November. After repeated requests, the UN Refugee Agency reports the authorities finally granted the agency a one-time access to two refugee camps, Mai Eni and Adi Harush, in northern Tigray. UNHCR spokesman Baba Baluch says aid workers have found conditions in the camps dire and the Eritreans in desperate need of humanitarian aid.
Refugees were cut off from any supplies and services for more than 2 months. Wells were not functional without fuel for the pumps, leaving refugees to use water from a nearby creek for washing, cooking, and drinking, resulting in diarrhea-like illnesses.
Baluch says a one-time food distribution by the World Food Program 1 month ago is the only assistance the refugees have received for more than 2 months. He says plans for a second distribution are underway. In the meantime, UN staff who access the camps have distributed food to 25,000 refugees. Baluch says the number of beneficiaries is of concern because there were 50,000 Eritreans in the two camps before the conflict erupted. So it is likely many fled in fear of their safety.
Refugees told our staff that while they were not impacted directly from the fighting, they were threatened and harassed by various armed groups. The refugees told us they continue to have safety concerns, reporting armed gangs roam the camps at night, stealing and looting.
Before the conflict began, Tigray sheltered 96,000 Eritrean refugees in 4 camps. Baluch says the authorities continued to deny aid agencies access to the Shemelba and Hitsuts refugee camps further north in Tigray. He says the UNHCR continues to receive reports of significant damage to those camps and of refugees fleeing in search of safety and food. Of even greater concern, he says, are worrying reports of refugees being abducted and forcibly returned to Eritrea, where their lives could be at risk. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Starting Friday this week, we will resume airing listener comments. Send your brief comments about issues in our news or what is happening in your area. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. I repeat, the number is +1 202 630 8011. We will air your comments every Friday. That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Nasir by Gordon Kong. We've been listening to Gordon Kong with the song Nasir. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your vehicles, phones, and homes. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you're in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Well, I
ya ba ji wai da wanye ga tin ba ji mi ya nan nuwa.